The following podcast is brought to you by the Jonas Podcasting Network, found exclusively at WrestlingWithJonas.com. Hello and welcome to another episode of Wrestling with Jonas, part of the Jonas Podcasting Network. And we are live once again, our third live interview in the space of 6 days. It's been a busy week, but I'm honoured, I'm privileged to have a bona fide European wrestling legend with me on this podcast, on this episode of Wrestling with Jonas, Emil Satochi. Emil, fantastic to have you on the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. And I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for that nice intro too, by the way.
Ah, oh, my pleasure. And it gets better from here. It really does. But I've got to start by asking you about your recent feud with Tristan Archer. Now, we've had Tristan on the show before, a good friend of the podcast, loving what he's doing in WXW and NXT UK on occasions as well. But between the two of you, you've had four tremendous matches since about December last year, the Catch Grand Prix in WXW. It was a match I believe you got injured in, as a matter of fact, but since then you've recuperated, you've returned, you've had another three awesome matches with him, including one not too long ago, a number one contenders match. But tell us a bit about your rivalry with Tristan, because he's one of our favourites on this show, and those four matches have been absolutely stellar.
Thanks for saying that. Me and Tristan, the funny thing is we must have met like 10 years ago if it wasn't longer, and we never crossed paths in the ring before, ever. We've been on many of the same shows, been in many of the same places, but we never touched in the ring right up until WXW finally booked it, and they brought Tristan in. He hasn't been there for very long yet, and you know, one of the best ways for him to test the waters is to get in the ring with me. I've been there forever. So what can I say? You know, Tristan is a great, great guy, great athlete, very dedicated. And I was pleasantly surprised at how good he was in the ring. I'd seen some of his matches, but it's different when you feel a guy out there. And, you know, getting in the ring with him is always very exciting. He brings out the best in me, and I think I bring out the best in him as well.
Yeah.
What can I say? He got the better of me in that Catch Grand Prix. I did get injured in the match. The first match we did.
Yeah. Was it the injury? I think it was your leg, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah. I had a split-legged moonsault, and I just landed like I always do. And I just felt something go pop, and I was just like, ooh. Oh, shit.
You can swear on this podcast. Absolutely fine. Lights going. I
can swear. Oh, fuck. My fucking lights are going. There we go.
But it took you a few months to recover, didn't it? And then one of your return matches was against Tristan. But all fit and well now? You're kind of fully recovered?
My knee is totally fine, I'm happy to say.
Good.
It's just really weird. And he felt very guilty about it too. And he came up and apologized to me. And I was like, don't, because there's nothing you could have done differently. I just landed and I just broke. And that never ever happens to me. And I'm happy to say I came back kind of quick, but it did. Caused me some trouble there for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, you don't strike me as being the type of wrestler that gets injured much, if at all, to be honest with you. Certainly with your kind of, you know, your physique and your fitness. I'm guessing it was a bit of a freak occurrence for yourself.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think I've ever really been injured. I've been knocked out once. Yeah. Well, not out, but like I took a bad hit once. And then I hurt my knee, and that's it, really. I think, you know, of course there's aches and pains that build up over the years. I can definitely feel I've been wrestling for 20 years, because I've been wrestling for 20 years now. Even though
yes. 36. Congratulations on that. It's a milestone year for you, isn't it? 20 years in the business. I mean, we're going to get to that very, very soon. But your last match with Tristan was a number one contenders match for the WXW Unified World title. Now, it's a title that's eluded both yourself and Tristan so far. That must niggle at you ever so slightly, because you've won pretty much everything around the European scene on WXW, but never quite that unified title.
You know, and that's something that bothers me, because I've come close to winning that title. So, like, I didn't get that many shots, but whenever I did, I would always come very, very close. I think I've beaten the champion three times in like a non-title match or like a match where the title couldn't change hands. When Yuren last had the belt, I beat him clean, but then the belt wasn't on the line. And then finally, when I get my shot, something screwy happens and I don't get to win it. That's something that it's kind of like a Satoshi curse. Is I always come very close to it, but I never quite get there in WXW.
I'll tell you what's got to happen. The perfect resolution. It's got to be a three-way somewhere down the line between yourself, Tristan, and Bobby Guns for the title. That would be an awesome pay-per-view main event. Would you agree?
It would. It would be a lot of fun. I just don't... Well, Bobby Guns is not the champion now, is he?
Oh, Marius Alani, isn't it?
Yeah. So it would be... Which again, like, Marius is a guy. I took the shotgun belt from him. But I don't think I'll be getting in the ring for the unified title anytime soon. I don't know. But it would be a fun match. Me, Tristan, and Marius would be really cool. But
that really would. Yeah. Put that on the main event of the next WXW pay-per-view. That would certainly draw the viewers. But like I say, you've had an incredible career. Far from over as well. You've got many, many years left. But you started very young, didn't you? I understand you started around 17 in the business. Tell us how it all came about. How did you kind of fall into the wrestling business? How did you start your training? What kind of inspired you to become a pro wrestler?
Well, when I was about, I was very, very young, like 3 or 4 years old. I saw WWF on television and I was just blown away by it as a small, small child. And that's when I decided that when I grew up, I was going to be a wrestler. And the Netherlands is not a wrestling country. So, of course, my mom thought, oh, God, not that stuff. I hope it's a phase, you know. And then I went into judo and I got okay at it. Then I went into gymnastics and I got pretty good at that. I was not a hard worker. So I made it to the national level. And then when I was about 15, I fell back in love with wrestling because I found this store that would sell VHS tapes and I would spend all my money buying those. WCW, I think, came on television around that time. So wrestling kind of started getting a little bit hotter. 98, I think. And then there was like a chance meeting of a friend of the family who hadn't seen us in a long time. And she's like, what are you into these days? And I said, I really like wrestling. And she's like, oh, there's the guy who works at the bank here who I think is a wrestler. And I was like, really? Because I'm like from a town where there's like 100,000 people there. And like I said, Netherlands is not a wrestling country. But sure enough, a guy worked there called famous Louis Van Eden. I don't think you've heard of him, but he was one of the first like indie guys from the Netherlands. And he was 30 years old at the time and I was 15. But he's like, if you want to try this, come along and go train with us. And there was this tiny, tiny school in the south of the country where Bas van Kunder taught wrestling classes. And he was trained by Alpha the Wild Simone. So that's how I got started. My first battle royal, first time in the ring, I was 15 years old. So
wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
then, like the year after, I covered up with a luchador mask to hide, you know, the fact that I was just a child. So I was a gymnast, so I had the abs going on. I wasn't very like muscular. I was like very slim, but still like, you know, cut. And so I put a lucha mask on to hide my face, called myself Luchador Satoshi. And
I was gonna mention that you started as Luchador Satoshi, and then you've explained the reason why, because you wanted to cover up your baby good looks, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But But then, I mean, you only kept the mask on for a couple of years, didn't you? And then I think you lost a loser must leave town match, and then you returned unmasked. But I mean, shortly after that, I believe you had your first tour of America not too long after that, didn't you? Is that about right? About 2004?
Yeah, that's true. I was determined to become a professional wrestler at the highest level. And, you know, of course, you run into all these things. People tell you can't make it, you can never make it, etc. They don't want a Dutch guy, you're too small, all that stuff. They told me all that stuff. But I wanted to do it. So when I graduated high school in the Netherlands, I signed up for another year of high school, but in the United States. And I did that so I could learn how to be a wrestler there and get proper training. I had known Chris Hero because he was on some of our Dutch shows and I did a camp with him. And I requested to be placed near where he lived. And so I spent 1 year living in Orleans, Indiana, like a tiny, tiny town. But it was about an hour from Clarksville, where Chris Hero lived at the time. So he trained me for a year and I got booked on IWA Mid-South shows. I did some Chikara shows, some Combat Zone Wrestling. So for an 18-year-old guy, you know, I was going up the ladder pretty good. But
yeah,
my visa only lasted for a year, so that's when I returned. And Chris was the one who told me, if you want to learn how to do this right, take off the mask and learn how to work the crowd with your face. So.
There we go. And all this started with a friend that knew somebody worked in a bank that could get you yes. started. What coincidence, eh? How these things kind of materialize out of nothing. But fortunate yeah. because you were a wrestling fan from a very young age, so it was working. Right. The plan was starting to unfold, wasn't it? But
it was meant to be. My dad being a boxer and my mother being a gymnast and me becoming this hybrid, it all makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously your background in gymnastics fits perfectly into your wrestling style that we've come to love and know over the last 20 years. But while you're out in the States, I mean, at such a young age, you had matches, if I'm not mistaken, against Eddie Kingston, a very young Eddie Kingston, and Matt Sydal during, when they were kind of fairly early into their career. Obviously, you probably didn't know that they were going to be, you know, big stars further down the line, but a great experience for you back then to wrestle American names such as those back in the mid 2004-2005.
Yeah, it was a very, very hungry, talented generation of wrestlers. Wrestling had just come off that boom period, you know. So everybody who was in the ring at the time was like really dedicated, and also like the when you think of it now, when you think back now. Like when I was there, it was 2003, right? So like only 6 years before that is when kayfabe was still very much intact. So there was more of an old school mentality back then, and I'm very happy that I got to experience a little bit of that, anyways.
Yeah.
And there were all these great talents around that we could learn from. Like I was on shows with Sabu was there, or like Chris Candido, or Jerry Lynn, those guys were all on cards with us. So
absolutely. A very young Seth Rollins, Tyler Black, I believe that you was in the Tyler ring with Black. Him, and Claudio as well, Cesaro. Yeah. So these were, you know, Claudio had probably only just gone over to the States from Switzerland around about then, and Tyler must have been very young, probably of a similar age to yourself, and both cutting their teeth on the US Indies.
I think I saw Tyler Black's second match ever or third match ever on the show that I was on, and they were already talking about how quickly he picked things up. It's pretty impressive. And Claudio, I spent the year with Hero in the States, and Claudio was a little bit envious in a good way. Claudio's a great, great friend. And right when I left is when Claudio won that green card lottery and then got to live in the States. And then 2005, I spent 3 months living with Claudio and Hero, and then we did a bunch of shows there. So
that's absolutely awesome. That's amazing. Yeah. And then coincidentally, when you returned back to Europe, almost straight away, you started wrestling for WXW. What a fantastic opportunity, because I think before you went over to the States, you were wrestling primarily in the Netherlands, spent the year in America, came back, and then started doing shows for WXW. So it seemed to go from one good, great opportunity to another great opportunity. You must have felt very lucky.
Yeah, I'd wrestled for WXW before, but there had been a change in management, and the people that took it over were Felix Kohlenberg, Tassilo Young, basically the people that are still in charge today. And they had a different approach to wrestling, because it was run before, it was more run like an outlaw goth club type, you know, the wrestler called Hate, hardcore wrestler.
Yeah.
He basically ran it, and he would do definitely create that unique atmosphere. That's a lot of the credit goes to him. But then when I came back, it was a different ballgame. There was more talent coming in, you know, there was more etiquette, wrestling etiquette backstage. And I was very happy to be a part of it. Yeah, very fortunate.
Absolutely. I want to talk to you about the wrestling scene in the Netherlands, because when you broke in, you said that wrestling wasn't popular on TV, and like I say, you were lucky if you could get more than WWF, I should imagine, at the time, or WWE. But what was the rest of the indie scene like in Holland back in the early 2000s? And how did you see it kind of grow through the years, then, Emil?
Well, there was two groups. Somehow in wrestling, even though there was like 10 people involved, they still managed to have a falling out and have two groups. One was called the Dutch Wrestling Federation, points for creativity there, you know. And the other was Freestyle Championship Wrestling, which is also like, you know. And I was with the second group, but they wouldn't run often. It would be a couple shows a year, just in like local gymnasiums and stuff. And it started to build a bit more as we got to interact with, you know, outside talent more. WXW was very instrumental in bringing guys to Europe that had a better work rate than we did. But right. Guys like Chris Hero, or, you know, of course, Robbie Brookside is from Europe, but Hero, Brookside, they would bring him in. But they would also have, you know, like Mike Quackenbush come in, or even like CM Punk and those guys. And that really helped the European guys learn a lot. When you talk about the Dutch Indies, right now there's two groups. There's Pro Wrestling Holland, which is kind of like a place where young wrestlers can learn the ropes and start their career, which is very nice. They're doing very good. And there's also Dutch Pro Wrestling, and they're silent now because of the Corona situation, but they had a really good run about 10 years ago, where they would have shows with like RVD on them that draw like 800 people, or like Kevin Nash, or like they would bring these big names. But the main difference is the Dutch pro wrestling guys tended to stay isolated in their own bubble. And me coming from the other group, the Freestyle Championship Wrestling, I was used to interacting more outside. Yeah. And that's when you learn more, really. You know?
Yeah.
And I think when the European indie scene started, it was like a lot of guys, like especially German guys, goth looking guys. They all look like Raven. They all had like a t-shirt and jeans, and they would do a lot of hardcore wrestling matches and stuff in front of not too many people. And there wouldn't be a lot of psychology. Some veterans would know and would try to teach, you know, but it was also hard to grasp. And I think right now, in a lot of places in Europe, I think the level is caught up with the American indie level.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And going back to what you said earlier, mid 2000s, WXW were bringing in the imports, but they were making WXW more credible by having these popular indie names and helping to elevate the European wrestlers that are on there and vice versa. It was a kind of a great mesh at the time to really elevate the product and make it was kind of like the seeds for what WXW has become over the years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And go on, carry on, please.
Well, WXW, for the longest time, they would bring in these outside talents that could put on great matches, but the business end of it would still be lagging a little bit.
Right.
Because they were not a professional production company. And also, it was also very, very indie. And sometimes indie people like to do indie jokes that indie guys will get, but the crowd will maybe look at it and be like, what the fuck's going on, you know?
Yeah.
There's more of that mentality, more like a boyish mentality. And I think around 2014, I'd left a bit to do a TV show. And then when I came back, WXW had also changed its mentality. And you can really see that now because they have their shit together. They have
100%.
Nice productions. Good screens, you know, tight schedules, better rings. It's really improved over the last 7 years or so.
Yeah, Alex, I've spoken to Tristan, I've spoken to Ender Carr as well. They both say that the production values is very, very professional. They run it very professionally, and you can tell that just by watching any product. And of course, there's quite a bit of content on the WWE Network or Peacock if you're watching this over in the States. But I want to stick with 2005 because, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that's also around the time when you had your first encounter with someone who's been a big part of your career. And I'm sure that he would say that you've been a big part of his career. But Tommy End, Aleister Black, Malachi Black, how were you first introduced to Tommy back in the day then, Emil?
He was a guy that I just mentioned two groups, Dutch Wrestling Federation and Freestyle Championship Wrestling. And those groups were considered the pros, you know. And Tommy was even one step below for a second, where he had his own little group, Dutch Extreme Wrestling, where they would wrestle on just gym mats. They didn't even have a ring.
Okay.
And but, you know, the wrestling bubble was so small that when we came across these guys, they joined Dutch Wrestling Federation first, but also the FCW guys, myself included, were like, well, why don't we give him a shot, you know? And so he was booked on one of our Dutch indies. That's the first time I ever met him.
Yeah.
And then he slowly moved up. You know, we have very simultaneous career paths, I think, up until a certain point.
Absolutely. And you kind of had this, I don't know whether you would call it a rivalry, but kind of checking through your history and Tommy's history, every so often you would kind of intertwine and have these matches. And probably for a span of about 10 plus years, you two kind of face each other, it would be on WXW or in Holland or some indie promotion around Europe. But one of the first matches that I believe that you had the honor or privilege of facing Tommy was when you defended the WXW lightweight title. And get this, there was yourself versus El Generico, Super Dragon, and then Tommy. I mean, what a lineup. I mean, what a fantastic match. Did you have any memories of that match in particular? I think it was around November 2005.
I remember that, I'll tell this from my perspective, and I don't want to piss anybody off, but Super Dragon was coming into WXW, and he was pretty hot, you know, but he would just, I'm glad I can cuss, but he would just chop the fuck out of people. And I remember he had this match with Stevie Douglas, I think it was, where he just beat the fucking shit out of him. But it was just like fucking hard chops, this and that, and like also his forms, and they just looked fucking stiff.
Yeah,
and the match I remember seeing a match that went so fucking long, where they did so much stuff, and there was this half Nelson suplex dropping a guy on his head, I think almost, or I don't know, and it just looked brutal. And I remember there was also guys critiquing him for saying, you know, he's chopping all these guys, but he's got this padding on his chest, so if you chop him back, you know, he's why does he cover up?
Yeah.
And I like Super, I don't know if I can say his name, but I like Super Dragon personally as a person. He was very friendly to me, very nice. But I remember seeing one of his matches and saying, if he tries that shit with me and he hurts me, I will fuck him up.
Yeah.
Which is not a very nice thing to say. But that's how I felt at the time. I was also like a young testosterone guy. I was like, if he hurts me, because I told you I'd suffered a knock to the head before and I didn't enjoy it very much. So I was trying to protect myself a little bit. And then sure enough, we put the match together, and I don't know if somebody told him, but it was built in a way. If you look at the match now, there's almost no touching between me and Super Dragon.
Right. He must have got the word.
maybe he did. I'll say, like, I wrestled him, and whatever stuff we did was totally fine. Very nice. He's always been very nice to me, so I really can't say anything bad about him. But that's just... that's just what I remember from that match. And also what happened is I hit Super Dragon with a snap my driver and then covered him. Tommy grabs me from behind. I hit him with a snap my driver too. And if you look at the tape, Tommy was the first that took the move when I came back from America and introduced it, and he took it beautifully. And then the second time he took it was that match, and he tried it, but his feet got caught on the bottom rope, so he couldn't flip, and he just went bonk on his head, like, boom, right on his head, pile drove himself almost, and I covered him, and that was it. And when you look at the Japanese commentary, the commentators are like blown away by that bump, because it just looks so brutal. But he got caught at the bottom rope. I remember Tommy taking a lot of punishment in that match, like Super Dragon chopping him, El Generico doing a brainbuster on the top rope on him, where he actually just bop and he just stays there. It's pretty brutal.
Yeah. And you've obviously been keeping tabs on Tommy. I'm guessing that you're probably in touch with him on a regular basis through his NXT and WWE career. And now, of course, he's in AEW. So doing what's good for him, you know, character-wise and artistically and creatively in a happy place now.
He seems like he's doing really well. The thing with me and Tommy was like going parallel. Like, I was a step ahead because I spent so much time in the States, and I was maybe a bit bit more built, bit more, you know, experienced in a way. And the difference between us is like our careers kind of went simultaneously for a bit, but I was always trying to be what I thought WWE wanted me to be. So I was like this clean cut, you know, no tattoos, because that's what they wanted at the time, trying to get big and lean and, you know, natural, no chemical enhancements and all that stuff, yeah. Which I'm not saying Tommy did that, but yeah. Tommy was always doing what he liked. And he was doing these more and more indie wrestling, more like the kicks, the martial arts. He got tattooed all over and stuff, because I don't think his goal was ever to go to WWE. And I, sure enough, what happened was I got sidetracked doing a bunch of TV shows. I think I was on WWE's radar a bit too early when they were still looking for a bit bigger guys. I got a bunch of tries, and then I got close to getting signed, but I didn't. And then Tommy got it and did the Aleister Black thing. Yeah. But I think he's doing much better now in AEW. I think he looks like he's in more of a happy place now.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
And I never quite got why they didn't use Tommy more or better in WWE.
Oh, absolutely. Because I mean, if you look at what if you look at what he was doing in NXT, they kind of had his character, the entrance. You know, he had the freedom.
I didn't like the Dracula thing. Like the Dracula thing. No, it's too.
I thought
too
the entrance was awesome, but maybe that's just me. But
like, if somebody's this evil fucking guy who's like sinister, could you imagine him walking up to the fucking stage and lying down on a gimmick to sit up? Yeah. I don't think he would do that. That's just how my mind works, though. That's an issue I have with a lot of modern wrestling, is they overproduce it.
Very true. Yeah, that is very, very true. But please carry on.
Oh, I'm very happy. I worked a lot for Flash Gordon, who I'm sure not a lot of people have heard of, but he's this old school promoter from France who ran his territory, which was all of France pretty much, like a territory. So right. There would be kayfabe, and for the longest times they would have heel and face locker rooms kayfabe from the time we got into the door, because what he did is he didn't promote his own shows, he sold shows like Brian Dixon does in the UK or did in the UK.
So
we would go to all these different towns that hadn't seen us before, or maybe had seen us the year prior. And then we would kayfabe, and we would do like it was almost like old school, like 80s or 90s wrestling with a touch of, you know, modern influence brought by guys like me or whatever. But I'm very happy I got to experience that, because when you look at an old school match like Bret Hart and Mr. Perfect 92, when Bret wins the IC title, there's this genuine outcry of joy from the audience when the face beats the heel, because they weren't, I think they weren't too concerned with whether it was real or not. They were concerned with their guy winning. And I heard those kind of responses in France a lot back in the day. And I'm very happy I got to experience that, more like the old school territory.
I know you very much into the kind of building a story within the match, as opposed to having a thousand moves per minute. Yeah. Where do you stand on that? And I know that, you know, some of your moves are very athletic, but do you balance that with good storytelling within your matches as well? Is that kind of your philosophy in the ring?
I like sports-based wrestling. Like the product WXW does now suits me better than the product they did all the time when I was there. But what I like is... I like wrestling to be realistic, but with certain touches of, you know, like spectacular elements. And I lost my train of thought there for a second. Oh yeah, what my stance is, though, I completely get what happens with all these young guys coming in, because I was one of them. When you come in as a wrestler, you want to go and you want to do all the cool stuff you see on TV. We all start off as fans. Yeah. And when you start off as a fan and you go into the ring, you try to do what you saw on television. But that's where simulating a match comes from, is you just emulate. But you don't actually think about what it would be like to be in a fight. And that's what's missing now, right? It's these very tiny details. Like even when you're in a headlock, you need to be working. Or like the facial. Some facial where people go, it's like you don't do that in a fight.
Yeah.
So I try not to. But I'm also... You know, I completely get it. When I talk to younger wrestlers now, I'll tell them I'm going to say this to you, and I don't necessarily expect you to do everything I tell you, but I just want you to remember, because someday the light bulb is going to go off in your head. Absolutely. And then I tell them all these cliches that they also told me when I didn't listen. And it's less is more. You don't need to flip all these. You don't need to do all these flips. It's about the details. It's about the little things. It's about, you know, telling a story, sucking people in.
Yeah.
And I like my wrestling to be kind of in the middle. You know, I like the Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels type matches, the era. And I think a little bit more. I think now that I get older, I appreciate Bret a little bit more than like Shawn a little bit less, maybe. But what they do now is like Ricochet and Ospreay, for example, like bless their hearts. What they do is amazing. But it's not my kind of wrestling. It's gone too far. When I was last in touch with WWE, somebody told me, well, gymnasts make the best transitions now. And I'm like, I'm sure they do, but it's too much.
Let's talk about your WWE experience, because did you have a tryout around about 2012? I know that you certainly had a dark match against Jack Swagger, before a SmackDown taping. Tell us about your WWE experience. You said that you came close to being signed, but give us your version of what happened there, and your thoughts and feelings on what happened.
There's a couple of stories that I can tell you. Like, my tryouts have been, at the end of the day, I can only look in the mirror and be like, hey, you know, you didn't show them what they needed to see. That's my final conclusion. But there was also like some bad luck involved with some stuff. And I was one of the, I think I was in there on their radar pretty early, like 2011, 2010, maybe. Like before they were signing up all these indie talents, they were already looking at me.
Yeah.
But then I wasn't like a 6'5", 250-pound guy. So I needed to work hard to show off what I got. I had this one tryout with where Paige got signed, Brittany Knight got signed, and I was wrestling her brother Max. And then I was,
you were part of that. Okay, yeah. So because that's quite a famous moment, isn't it? Really, because it's actually been documented in a documentary and a movie nowadays.
Yeah, I was there for it. Yeah, I was backstage for it. And what happened is, and I don't know if this is in the movie, because I can't bring myself to watching a movie because it hurts me too much. But I wrestled Zach, and he hits the ropes, he tackles me, I take a big bump, and I hear Jamie Noble go, "Doc," and I get up and my eyebrows busted. So like as he tackled me, he headbutted me in the face, and I got busted open.
Yeah.
And that's not something that's very cool at a tryout, right? So then I ran to the back, I got stitches, and Scott Armstrong, for some reason, wanted to take pictures of it. He sent me the pictures. And what I did is I got stitches, and I ran right back to the ring and got back up in the apron, wanted to go again, and then tryout was over. And then, you know, they came up to me and said, well, the best thing you could have done is what you did right there, is to go up there and show that you had the heart to continue. But I didn't get signed because it just didn't look very good. Another time I had a match with Mikey Whipwreck. Whiplash. Sorry, Mikey Whiplash.
The ECW star or?
No. Whipwreck was the ECW star.
That's right.
And then Whiplash.
Oh, he was Whiplash, yes. Right. I know who you mean. Yeah.
And we had a great match, and Arn Anderson watched it, and he was like, good match, boys. And they were nodding their heads, and we were feeling pretty good. And then after the tryout, just nothing happens. Nobody comes up and says, guys, you're done. Nobody tells you nothing. And you just walk out and you're like, that's it. And I remember Whippy being very disappointed. You know,
just wait for that phone call that never comes.
Yeah. And then like years down the road, they had me come over again. That's when I wrestled Jack Swagger.
Right.
And I cut the promo of my life backstage, tears in my eyes, you know. And sure enough, they didn't have a camera to tape it. And then the guy from the office that saw it, a guy named John, he got let go like a week and a half later. So that was all. So there's been a couple of those where I'm just like, really? Oh, man. But they even flew me to Florida once to take a look at me for a camp. So, you know, they definitely tried their best to keep in touch with me. And then the last time, like around 2014, after the Swagger match, they said, hey, we want to look at you again. We want to keep you on our radar. You got to come back next year. And then I got this offer to do a TV show, and I was telling them like, hey, do you want me to do this? And they were like, yes, get your name out there. So I did this TV show for 6 months. I even had a wrestling show on the TV show just to show the whole country that I was like this wrestler that could do stuff. And then I got out of it. And then for some reason they were like, yeah, we're going to give you another shot. And then they didn't. They just canceled the entire tryout. And then for a couple of years, they just wouldn't invite me back. And I'm like, well, you said that you were going to have me back.
Yeah.
And I even got famous in the country because I was somewhat of a local celebrity or like a Dutch celebrity for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was seen by like a million people every day for half an hour for like 6 months straight. So trying to show myself off. Yeah. And then for years, nothing. And all of a sudden, 2019, they were like, hey, come by, because they had these German tryouts. And yeah. And then they made a documentary there. They were doing Germany tryouts. They had set it up nice. They had a camera crew filming it.
Yeah,
and I could kind of tell from the beginning that the focus was not on me, but it was on Ilya and some other guys. And so I don't know why I don't know. I really don't. I can't look in their heads. You know.
Well, no. But who knows?
I know they appreciate me. I know they appreciate me, and they said very nice things to me even the last time. But it's been bittersweet because I obviously never got signed.
It just sounds like every time, you know, just a little bit of an unfortunate situation has occurred that's meant that it's not quite happened. But like I say,
I'll do you one worse. This is very personal, but I was not necessarily expecting to be invited back, and I was a little bit bitter about it because I was like, well, they said I should do this show, and they said they would have me back, but why wouldn't they take another look at me? I just didn't quite understand it. And it kind of wore me down because I'm like, well, I'm 32, 33, 34, you know, so not getting any younger. And I was just chomping at the bit because I knew I was good enough to be there. Like I've had people say some very encouraging things to me.
When you see Tristan appear on NXT UK, is that something that
let me finish this for a second.
Yeah, no, please carry on.
But what happened is, unfortunately, my sister passed away, and that was a big shock. Like, obviously, very, very, very tough. And right as I went to see her at the funeral home, that's when the email came in from WWE saying, hey, there's these Germany tryouts. We want you to be there. And I was just like, I'm not a very spiritual person, but I was like, this is redemption, right? This is my shot to show what I can do. And I went there 3 days, busted my ass. And then at the very end of it, you know, guys were getting injured, this and that, but I kept standing. I did everything I could. And then in the end, the trainers went out of their way to say that they appreciated my effort, but I didn't get signed. And that's like, you know, it's like, oh, here comes the happy end. No, fuck you. It's life.
Yeah. I think sometimes with WWE and the tryouts, they kind of change the goalposts and the criteria of what they're after pretty much every single time. And you can go in there with certain expectations or kind of prepare yourself in a certain way, but I don't think you can ever prepare for what they're after, because like you say, they're so changeable in terms of what they're after at that particular moment. Yeah. So no matter how hard you prepare. But I was going to say, when you see the likes of Tristan Archer appear on NXT UK, does that give you any kind of hope that, you know, maybe a WWE experience by way of NXT UK might be possible? Is that something that would interest you?
I would do it just because I had my sights set on it for so long. You know, it would be coming full circle for me in a way. And every time, I'm being very honest here, every time somebody new pops up on their show, it hurts me a little bit. But at the same time, you know, sincerely, I believe Tristan Archer deserves it, and I'm very happy for him. And I texted him saying, hey, man, I'm very happy for you. And it's just good. It's good for him. You know, I'm at this point now where I've kind of made peace with it a little bit. Not quite yet, but a little bit, because I feel like I have what it takes to be there. I'm very, very confident about that, but it may not happen.
Yeah.
Like you said earlier, like me meeting a friend and then by like a chance meeting, you know, it all lined up so perfectly. And
exactly.
Throughout my whole career, it all lined up perfectly, but then I'm still waiting for that big, where does it all lead to moment.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, I want to speak to you about two individuals that you probably know very well, that you've been in the ring with many, many times, and coincidentally about NXT UK, Walter and Ilya Dragunov, because you've been there from the very beginning of their career, pretty much. You've gone on a very similar journey to them as well. Both of them former WXW Unified Champions. But what's your thoughts when you kind of see them? I mean, they're absolutely crushing it, aren't they, on NXT UK? Last weekend, TakeOver 36 over in the States. Those two guys, I mean, what's your experience of being in the ring with those two, first of all? I mean, I had an interview with Tyson T-Bone a couple of days ago, and he said that Ilya Dragunov is just the most intense wrestler person that he's ever seen in his entire life. And Walter, we know that he's just a specimen. Give us your take on those two and your experience of being in the ring with them.
Ilya in the ring is, but both actually, they're both a joy to work with, which is maybe a little bit odd for me to say a joy after watching them beat the tar out of each other.
Absolutely.
Just recently. They're both professional, very good workers. Ilya's a bit nuts. Like backstage, he hypes himself up in a way where it's like, this guy, he's always done that. Like, yeah, like headbutting the wall and stuff. I'm like, I don't know if it's advisable, but it obviously works for him. And Walter, what I think is cool about Walter is that he actually, they were like around the time they were eyeballing me, they were also looking at him, but he didn't want to go. And he just said, you know, I'm happy doing what I'm doing now. So he stood his ground and he kept doing his thing. And then, you know, now he's bringing this whole new style back to mainstream wrestling, which I think is awesome. I respect that, you know. I enjoy his work very much.
Oh, 100%. When you see those two in the ring, they it looks authentic. It looks like you're watching an actual fight, and they pretty much are tearing shreds out of one another. But I think that's the style that they enjoy, isn't it? That's the style they enjoy.
Yeah, and it's also and those two guys are also very capable of doing that kind of style and doing it the right way. If you would put Ilya against Sin Cara, I don't know if you would get that kind of match out of it. You know, so it's those two. Those two are probably the best two that can do it, and they're doing it right. The only thing I'm hoping is that they don't take it too far, where it becomes like I also watched their match where the legends like Shawn Michaels, Wade Barrett, like other guys would do commentary on their match. And Barrett one time said, "Ooh, that's a career shortener." And I'm like, I don't know. It may be, you know, I'm hoping they don't have a lot of career shorteners in there.
Yeah. But they're super tough guys, but can't wait to see what those two can deliver in the future. Let me take you back to the 4th and the 5th of April, 2019. Now, I don't know if you remember, but you were over in New York for WrestleMania weekends, had an amazing weekend of wrestling, because on the 4th, you defended your WXW Shotgun title against Maris Elani live on pay-per-view. And then on the 5th, you're in a 30-man battle royal for MLW before facing Brian Pillman Jr. at a WrestleCon show later on in the Grand Ballroom in New York City. So that must have been an amazing experience. And you've got an experience of being over in the States before, but over WrestleMania weekend, there's something special about it, isn't there? And then being involved in three really, really great shows. But tell us about your memories of that weekend.
Memories of that weekend. I loved being back in American wrestling rings. There's a special place in my heart for the American independent scene. I had so many good memories there, you know, 2003, 2004, 2005, then later 2011, and then now 2019. You know, I was honored to be a part of it. I'd like to give a shout out to MLW and High Spots, and also of course WXW for you know, having me. It was just a blast. And I a friend of mine from Holland came over, so we were having a good time. And also two of my high school friends from Indiana came over to see me. So it was like two worlds meeting for me. And I just loved it. I just wished that I was, for some reason, I was not in the best shape that weekend. I just wish I could have done more. That's yeah. really all I can. I wish I could have done more. Also, MLW, I love being at MLW, but it was a battle royal, and I wish I could have given him more.
Yeah. And while you're out there in New York, did you get a chance to say hi or see Tommy at all? Because that would have been his WrestleMania debut that weekend.
I didn't see.
Shame.
No, was that his, that was his debut? Was it
2019? Yes, I think he was in the tag team championship match with Ricochet, wasn't he?
I don't remember, but yeah. I didn't go to WrestleMania. You know, it was a funny story though. I went to I didn't go to WrestleMania because I didn't want to sit through 8 hours of it and not be yeah. involved. I don't like going to wrestling shows if I can't partake.
That's yeah, something that's, especially super yeah. long ones like that.
Yeah, exactly.
I was in New Orleans in 2018, and I think the show went about 7 hours. It was crazy.
Yeah. But then, like, I went to like a bar with my friend from Holland, and we were watching the show. Oh, I did meet Chris Hero, and I went to the Hall of Fame after party. But so I went to like a bar, watch WrestleMania, and there was like a lot of fans being proper fans, and it was a bit rowdy. We couldn't get a seat, so we went back to the hotel we were staying at, which was the Midtown Hilton, where the WrestleCon was held. I had a room there. And went to the hotel bar, and we were like, do you have WrestleMania? Because they had all the conventions there too. And then they were like, no, we don't have it. I'm like, you had all these conventions, but you don't have WrestleMania somewhere? And then the guys at the bar was like, the guy behind the bar was like, I can hook you up with a free stream. So he took my phone, he found a stream, and we watched it. And like, we were looking around, see if there's some company, and there's just an old man sitting next to me, and not much else going on. And so we're just watching, and I'm watching Triple H versus Batista, and I'm talking my friend through the match. I'm like, oh, look, pedigree. Well, that's not happening. He'll scoop out his legs probably. Oh, look, there you go. And then the old man next to us gets up and leaves. And I'm just like, all right, well, maybe enough of our shit. And then the bartender told me, like, I wasn't going to say anything when he was still there, but that was Eric Bischoff.
No.
So I'm like, really? Like, I was being a total fucking... the total fucking mark watching WrestleMania next to Eric Bischoff, and I didn't even recognize him.
Oh, what a story. Yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah, so stupid. Yeah.
In doing my research, Emil, like I say, over your fantastic 20-year career, you've wrestled pretty much everybody that's come through the European scene, pretty much everybody. But when you look back at some of your awesome opponents, some of your awesome matches, who've been some of your kind of opponents you've been really proud that you can kind of look back on and say, yeah, I've wrestled them? Somebody that you probably didn't think would be possible, but you got the chance. I mean, one name that jumps out is Jushin Thunder Liger. I know you got to wrestle him, but there must be a whole list of wrestlers that you were really, really kind of proud to step in the ring with.
Yes, I remember visiting family in Germany when I was maybe 6 or 7, and on the German television they would have wrestling, and I saw Liger on there, and he was just so big and colorful on this night. I'd never seen him before, but I remember in the weeks after I tried to draw pictures of him, what he looked like, and I made up my own Liger too, because I knew I couldn't get like the original drawing right, you know. But then being in the ring with him so many years later, that's like an amazing, humbling experience. Such a professional, such a great worker, great fucking talent.
Yeah.
So that really humbles me. And, you know, I made sure he had his moment after the match in front of the fans, because, you know, I have to respect that. Another one that I really like that I wrestled is Billy Gunn.
Right.
You know? Yes, because he was somebody that I really liked. I was a big fan of DX, you know, and yeah. I always thought, like, he reminded me of, in a way, of Mr. Perfect, because he had this like this way of moving, like very athletic for a really big guy, you know. And I'd come across him before once or twice, and didn't think much of it. Or I mean, he was okay, but he was, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But then when we wrestled, we clicked well. We had a good match. It was just a good solid opener, and he's one of those guys where you're in the ring with him. Like the way he thinks and works, like the way he thinks about the little things is very impressive. Like these tiny details, like famously, he was like, you have to move because when I go, I'm going, you know, I have to pull the trigger. Like sometimes you'll see guys waiting for each other to get up Yeah. Not him. He was just going to come because it's a fight. You get it, you know, got to get out of the way. And that was also very and the famous was just I don't know if I should say this, but it was just I was just very impressed by the way he executed that move.
I think Billy Gunn is very, very underappreciated for what he's done. I mean, he's a huge guy to start off with. Yes, I don't think you can really tell by watching it, but he's a big old guy. Was he? Must be 6'4", 6'5", all of 260, yeah. 270 pounds. And like you say, he's super athletic, very, very impressive. And of course, you know, he's won more championships than most people. So he knows best, I suppose.
Yeah, and he was just a total pro and a pleasure to work with. And it was just very, very cool to be in the ring and to have that, like the Attitude Era music hit and this and that. Because I'm a wrestler, but I'm also still a fan.
Oh,
I'm
not ashamed
of it. Did you know, and another funny one that I wrestled is I wrestled Becky Lynch.
No way.
Yes,
that's
I
interesting.
Did.
Tell me more.
I wrestled her. There was a tournament in Italy that was a disaster tournament. It had these some big names on there or were supposed to be there. AJ Styles and Samoa Joe were supposed to be there but didn't make it. I don't know why. But I was on a show with Stevie Douglas from Germany. Kevin Owens, Kevin Steen was on there. El Generico was on there, and some more indie guys, and also some women wrestlers. And the tour was promoted by an Italian promoter who had also promoted Rolling Stones concerts and stuff, apparently. But it was their son doing it. It was like kind of like, oh, so we're these successful promoters, but now our son gets to do this wrestling thing. And Italy was going through a wrestling boom, where some independents would draw 11,000 people.
Wow.
So they had these arenas booked that were like proper, like WWE size arenas, but there was no crowd, man. It was like 500 people, 300 people. Like the, it obviously wasn't very well promoted. And sure. It was just a disaster to everything that could go wrong, did go wrong. One guy lost his bag. I had missed my flight over there because I thought, you know, they booked me a Friday flight, but it was a Thursday flight. So I had to take a train to get there in time, and then somebody got injured and stuff got moved around, and in the end I ended up wrestling Rebecca Knox and Robbie Marino, I believe it was, in a three-way, and I took big old arm drag bumps for her, and I believe she won the match too. Yeah.
There you go, the man.
That's where the picture's from. There's this one picture on the WWE Network sometimes on shows where it shows like Kevin Owens and Rebecca Knox and then Sami Zayn on the tour together, and I'm in the picture.
I'm gonna
say that was
that
taken
one out
on that tour. They've it's happened. I think some feuds between Owens and Zayn, they would show that picture like, oh, these guys go way back, and then I'm there in the picture.
Yeah. One of my final questions on a similar topic is you've wrestled over here in the UK once or twice, and you've wrestled a lot of UK talent as well. And bearing in mind, mm-hmm. this is a UK podcast. I mean, some of the UK names that jump out to you, Emil, I mean, you know, for example, Zack Sabre Jr., you've been in the ring with him many, many times. And let's see, Johnny Storm and others like that. But who have been some of your favorite UK guys to jump in the ring with?
Johnny Storm, the first time I saw him wrestle was a live show at WXW Germany. It was the one show I went to that I was not booked on, just to see my friends wrestle. And he wrestled Crazy Sexy Mike and Armchair from Berlin. It was in a three-way. And I was blown away by some of the creativity, some of the spots they did. He hit this super kick and it made this big noise. And I was just blown by it, you know, because I wasn't that smart to do business yet. And I decided right then and there, we have our annual Dutch show, Wrestle Blast, it was called, Wrestle Blast 3. I was like, I want to wrestle Johnny Storm. So I paid him out of my own pocket just because I wanted to be in the ring with him. So promoter booked him, but I paid him.
You paid his fee.
Because I was 16 years old, but I wanted to have that good match. Or no, 17 years old. I wanted to have that good match with that guy. So I was definitely very impressed by Johnny Storm. And then later on, of course, Zack Sabre Jr., very good talent. You know, Pac, you know, very good. I wrestled him in one of his first matches, I think. Doug Williams.
You've had more than a few matches with Doug, haven't you?
Couple, not that many, actually. We had two singles, and we've had some multi-man matches. But our last singles was my one and only Progress match. It was in Germany, Frankfurt, Germany. And it was, I think, 2019, and got very good feedback on it from the promoters also. Doug's just total pro, and I think we told a good story there. I think that was one where wrestling was in a place where I like it to be, like this balance between technique and fighting and tough. And, you know, I like being, even though I was, you know, not on my worst behavior, you know, with the fans, I still made sure to like to dig in there and be mean when I have to, and, you know, do what I got to do to win, which I didn't. But,
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And as we start to wind down here, Emil, what are your kind of plans? What are your goals for the year? I mean, we're halfway through 2021, 2022 is around the corner. You're doing some great stuff with WXW. We mentioned earlier about the unified title. I'm guessing that's certainly in your eyesight. But what would you like to achieve over the next couple of years in your pro wrestling career?
In my pro wrestling career, I would like to do more with WXW. And yeah. I don't know where we are right now. Like, they have the Catch Grand Prix, which I'm not on the tournament this year. I've been there for very long that we're thinking of ways to use me to the best of my abilities. So we're going to see how that goes. I want to just – I've been in lockdown, of course, you know, sure. Working from home a lot. And I just want to – right now I'm just eager to get into, like, whatever ring I can. I'm doing some pro wrestling Holland stuff. I did some wrestling cult stuff in Germany. Hopefully WXW again soon. And, of course, if I can one day make my way back to America or Japan, that would be phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm also very fortunate because I'm also a television producer. I create and develop new television formats. I work for ITV Studios, Netherlands.
Absolutely. It's one of our main channels over here in the UK, and I did spot that on your Instagram profile, and I was very impressed. I wasn't sure whether to ask you, but I mean, what sort of content have you been able to produce or work on since you've been doing that role?
Well, I've been doing this for many years because I was on a couple TV shows in Holland, and then I studied media. I went to university, and then they were like, why don't you come work for us? So I got to produce it. Well, producing, I'm more about content. Like, for us, producing is like the finances and the logistics. And, like, we have a different word for the content producers. But what I did is I was the editor-in-chief of Love Island, the Dutch version, the most recent. So, basically, I got to call the shots when it came to content. Like, you know, what dates are we doing? What challenges can we come up with? What storylines are we going to put in the episodes? And I kind of booked it like a wrestling show a little bit, you know, like
old habits die hard.
Making sure we get the right face offs and stuff. And it's all about content.
Well,
and
that's a great
gig to have.
You've been telling stories pretty much all of your life. So that way kind of follows through onto the TV and the reality world. But Emil, it's been an absolute blast talking to you for nearly an hour. So it certainly flew by. But any of my audience that want to reach out and say hi, learn more about Emil Satoshi and maybe merch or anything like that, where can we find you? I'm guessing you've got your socials out there. Where can we find you? Say hi and learn more about Emil Satoshi.
Well, if you want to keep if you want to find out more about me, I'd say just go to my Instagram page, go to my Facebook. Just type in Emil Satoshi, you should be able to find me. And if anybody wants to reach out and say hi, I'd be happy to say hello back. Thanks for having me, and thanks everybody for listening to me telling stories for an hour.
and of course, you got all of your a lot of Emil Satoshi matches available on YouTube. I think you've got your own YouTube channel, and of course the WWE Network with WXW on there, and a lot of Emil Satoshi on the WWE Network. But Emil Satoshi, my friend, thank you very much. It's been an honor and a privilege speaking to you, and we'll catch up with you all again soon.
Thanks for having me.